It's Light the Tower, your daily look around the world of sports with Hall of Fame broadcaster and voice of the Texas Longhorns, Craig Way.
Say goodnight to this one!
And Horns 24/7 insider, Jeff Howe. On your live, local, and independent home for sports talk in Austin, The Horn.
Second hour of Light the Tower here on The Horn, Craig and Jeff. Coming up, just a couple of minutes, we'll visit with Keith Moreland to talk Longhorn baseball, regional baseball, the national scene of college baseball. That's coming up here in just a few moments. Cleanup from hour number one, Beaver Lance Jason asking is, was at least a twin sister the dude was marrying at the last minutes? And the answer, I think, was no about that. He said, never mind, I've found the story online and had to read it for myself. Sad and bizarre. Somebody asked if they used the same wedding dress. Doubt that, because it happened in the same day. And then somebody asking if your cat is no gas, all brakes.
That describes him very accurately.
Somebody else with the mice story I read said calling the Pied Piper. Yeah, there you go. There's a thought on that. And someone else, and I agree, Jeff, I believe some Texas fans need to lower their expectation. The team isn't going to go 11-0. It's going to take time and patience. Hopefully they play 12 games, not 11. But the bigger thing is the texter spelled your name with a G and an E. That's just, you know, we've been down this road before.
Yeah, I hope people are just doing that as a bit at this point and you're not serious about it. So, but no. Hey, real quick, Craig, we got one college hoops note to get to before we get to our guest on the hotline. So this is important for Chris Beard's staff as it relates to Chris Ogden. Now, we know he's not in an official assistant coaching capacity.
That's correct.
But this is why Chris Beard filling out staff the way he did was so important. I don't know if they saw this coming or had it. Hunch that it was coming, but the NCAA today approved a waiver allowing non-coaching staff members for them to be actually coaching this summer. According to the release, two coaching staff members in basketball will be allowed. Two non-coaching staff members, excuse me, in basketball will be allowed to conduct instructional on-court activities during the 8-week summer access period. It also allows those staff members to participate in skill instruction activities as practice players. According to the release, there will be some limitations on the access period, though. No more than four coaches. And non-coaching staff members combined will be able to participate in these activities at any time. The changes go into effect June 4th. It's only for the 2021 summer access period. As far as why the NCAA made these changes, it was a result of the COVID-19 pandemic and multiple fronts. As far as that deal goes, supported because of a need for accountable coaches to be out recruiting following the dead period, as well as the change in transfer rules, just to make sure you've got enough, you're able to devote enough resources to recruiting and your current team. So props to the NCAA. So Chris Ogden will be heavily involved.
Yeah, no doubt about that. All right, let's go to the Vaqueros Cafe and Cantina hotline. Of course, on occasion broadcast partner, obviously the man who calls Longhorn baseball on LHN during the course of the regular season, former three-time All-American, the University of Texas, and more than a dozen years in the bigs. Keith Moreland joins us on the Vaqueros Cafe and Cantina Hotline. How are you holding up with all this rain? You building an arc yet? I know you're pretty much a handyman.
Oh, my Lord. I've never seen anything like it. First of all, Jeff, you've got to have some kind of app to explain what you just read, what the rules. NCAA, the Gestapo that they are, it just put out, say, hey, look, non-coaching staffs that are not on the coach staff can work with the players in the summer. Big deal. Okay. I mean, you don't have to go through a diatribe to get that done. It's just like what's taking place over the course of this weekend in 16 sites. You have 16 different, and Craig can tell you this, folks, you have 16 different people running the tournament. The University of Texas is not running this tournament.
That's correct.
It's run by a representative that's sent here from Indianapolis that has to call back to Indianapolis to tell them that there is rain. Because I'm on the television side of this thing, We don't get updated. They've had huge discussion over the last 2 days on how far Lightning has to be out to see if there are people on cameras or not. So it could be much simpler, I guess, is the best way to put it.
Yeah, but Keith, that just goes to show you we're applauding them for making, you know, a good common sense decision. That's how far down the road we are with this thing. Like they're getting credit now for stuff they're supposed to do.
Yeah, they don't get much credit from me, but I can tell you that. But we have universities. There are people. The University of Texas, TCU, where I'm working this weekend, at Nashville. Don't call them by the city. You got to call the regionals by their city name that they're in. Not that it's the Texas regional. It's the Austin regional. It's the Nashville regional. It's the Fort Worth regional. It's the Lubbock regional. You know, just come on. We got 16 locations. These schools can take care of it, and they'll produce a winner.
Yeah, my favorite one may be the Ruston Regional, or at least in terms of naming. Let me get you to – you and I have done this on Tuesday nights when we've done games this year, and I've walked you through RPI and gotten your response and looked at the polls and gotten your response and looked at the projections and gotten your response. So now we have a bracket that is ostensibly supposed to start tomorrow, and it will in most of the places anyway. I don't know about the state of Texas, given the circumstances atmospherically that we've talked about. But I want to take you through these and kind of get some reaction and response and your thoughts to this. So let me start with the number one overall seed. That's Arkansas, and they're playing in the Fayetteville Regional. And a couple of questions. Is the more intriguing story out of that, A, that Arkansas has been far and away the best team in college baseball this year, B, that Nebraska's there, coached by current Arkansas head coach and former Cornhuskers head coach Dave Van Horn, or C, that until their name came up on the board, almost no one had ever heard of the New Jersey Institute of Technology?
Well, I you're absolutely right. I think it's C. I just happened to come across some information on them right before the selection show, and said, you know, I was looking at the guaranteed spots because they won a conference tournament, and I'd never even heard of them. So I had to look it up and find out what city it was in, you know, that kind of thing. It's interesting. Arkansas, I guess the overall view when I look at the bracket, I really think there are four teams of the top eight national seeds that drew really, quote-unquote, fairly – easy sailing through the regional round, and then there's four sides of the top eight that I really think, that are pretty loaded regionals. Now, if you take that to the next week, guys, you know, I always look out, you know, what's happening? Who comes out of this? Where do they go? I think Texas got, now, they still got to take care of business, but I think overall they've got a very manageable regional if they take care of business and play the way they played most of the time at home. But in that second round, they're going to have either Miami or the University of Florida. So you've got a really – and at the beginning of the year, Florida was the number one team in the land.
Mm-hmm.
So that second round matchup, even though Texas is the overall national seed, that second round, if you get through that and get to a super – they got their hands full.
Yeah,
it's one of those things. Arkansas is the same way. That second round for them is a lot bitter. On the other side, let's say you take Texas Tech. I think they've got a reasonable chance to get through this regional. I mean, I would put it at 75%, but in their next round game, they got a tough opponent. So it's amazing how the committee did it and how they worked things out. They leaned a lot on RPI and some other things because of the fact is we did not have a lot of interleague play. In the southern United States, yes. But you take out west and up north, those conferences ate themselves up. So there's no really way to tell, you know, what kind of power comes out of either one of those places.
Which is why a Michigan with an RPI of 88 can get in over, say, a Baylor who skidded down the stretch, or even a Kansas State who tried to make the late run, and the biggest knock against them was their RPI and really their non-conference schedule of 251. I guess when Michigan is playing outside of conference, you're having to skew the RPI number just to get a reasonable read on them?
Yeah, I don't know how you get a reasonable read, because conferences are going to eat themselves up. If the number two overall RPI conference was the Big 12, and that's the way the NCAA or the RPI rated it, it only gets four teams in. What's wrong with this picture? Then you take the number one overall, gets nine teams in.
All right.
I'm confused. I mean, I think it was a tough year. Obviously, we have COVID, and maybe we'll get back to it. But I think there should be more input of not only RPI, but I think it goes in on who you play. I think strength of schedule for me is another one. Hey, what's an interconference relationship between the Big Ten and the SEC, or the ACC and the SEC, or the Big 12 and the SEC? I mean, it's not a good representative because of what was the cold snowmageddon that we had. So really didn't the first tournament of the year up in Dallas. It was wonderful to put together. But there, the three Texas teams hadn't been outside in a week.
Yeah.
So you really didn't get a great representation of what this league is about. And to be honest with you, I was not surprised Baylor. They had been on a skid that didn't get in, but I'm real surprised Kansas State didn't get in.
Yeah.
I thought they did enough to prove hey, we deserve a shot. And I'm telling you what, they would have been a dangerous number three seed somewhere.
Agreed. Visiting with Keith Moreland here on Light the Tower, talking about this weekend's opening of NCAA tournament play.
Keith, let's stay in the Big 12, because when I look at the top eights and who they got in their regional draws, if I'm Arizona hosting a Tucson regional, Oklahoma State was about the last number two seed I wanted to see in my regional. The Cowboys are playing, they're getting healthy, and I don't know if it's just I watch more Big 12 baseball than I watch some of the other leagues, but that's a really, really strong two seed considering the way they were playing at the end of the year.
Well, I spent a lot of days, Jeff. I totally agree with you, and I'm going to tell you why I agree with you. I spent a lot of days going down to High Corbett Field in Tucson, and Arizona now plays in High Corbett. That's where it is. The ball jumps. It's an old brick concrete wall on the outside. It's not a big field. The ball carries extremely well in Tucson. Not only is it hot, it's elevated, it's up in the air, and you're taking a powerful team, a team from top to bottom, to hit the ball at the ballpark. I will say that I think Oklahoma State's the favorite in that.
Wow.
I think they're the favorite.
Wow. Okay. Going back to the Austin Regional, another one of the topics you and I discussed, and I think all the way back into early April, we're in San Marcos, and I bring up Fairfield to you at the time, and you're like, they're what? And at the time, they were, I think, 23-1, and they had an RPI of number one at the time, and Arkansas was number two. Now it flipped shortly after that. They're still got a three RPI, and then a little more number crunching and prep for the region this week shows one of the reasons why, a 2.75 team ERA, which is Texas is second only to that, Texas at 2.95, the team ERA. But and David Pierce makes a good point. He said these are guys who are used to winning, but still in all, this is a team out of the Metro Atlantic Athletic Conference that hasn't seen this kind of caliber competition. What's your take on the Stags from Fairfield, Connecticut?
Well, I haven't done as much studying as you have on them, but I obviously with me doing the regional, the ESPN sends us a bunch of information from all the teams. So I've tried to take a look at them and see what's going on. And yeah, the first thing that jumps off the page is their pitching and their strikeout walk ratio. Those are two things that jump off the page. But is there one team, if you'll look at every one of their games, is there one team that they lined up against and played that you went, well, that's been a historically a good baseball program. So I don't know what to expect. I really don't know what to expect from them. But the one thing that I do know is in their league that they've been playing in, they were really good at throwing strikes. They're really good at catching the ball. And they have a couple of guys that have good arms in the back part of their bullpen.
Out of the 16 regional hosts, I'm going to call them out to you, and I'm just going to roll down the list. I want you to tell me which regional host is most likely to lose and not get out of their own regional. You may have already said it with Arizona, but I'm going to read off the 16. And then I want you to tell me the team that's most likely to not be a regional host that's going to advance to the super regional. And again, you might have already said it with Oklahoma State, but I'm going to roll down these and get your thoughts. All right. Arkansas, and then Louisiana Tech, Stanford, Texas Tech, Tucson, Ole Miss, East Carolina, and Vanderbilt on one side. And then on the other side, you have Texas, Florida, Notre Dame, Mississippi State, TCU, Columbia, South Carolina's hosting, although Old Dominion's the top seed there, Oregon, and Tennessee. Which is the most likely regional host to get knocked out this coming weekend?
I think the first and foremost to me is Oregon, and it's Gonzaga that'll get it done.
Okay.
I think Gonzaga is a sleeper. I think they got a veteran, and with COVID, they got a lot of fifth and sixth year players that know how to do it. They've been in this environment before. They've been to TCU. They've been in some other places, and so that would be my first upset. My second upset is I don't think Old Dominion will get out of their regional. And then I don't think Arizona gets out of their regional because I think Oklahoma State wins that regional. Those are the three that jump off the page. Now, the ones that are really competitive to me, there's some more that I think are really competitive. I think the regional in Ruston is competitive. I mean, I think they'll get out of that. But if I had to make a choice, that's the way I would go with La Tech. But there's a chance right there.
Yeah. You know?
I think the TCU regional, even though they are co-champions in the regular season, won the Big 12 tournaments, you're playing a team in Oregon State that's got so much history and tradition, and they are used to being on the road. They play their first 26 games every year are either in Arizona or in Southern California. They're used to being on the road. They're as good a pitching staff as I've seen other than Texas. I think Texas was one of the best pitching staffs that I've seen all year. So I think TCU has got their hands full. I think Tech will come out of the one in Lubbock. I don't see Arkansas. I think Ole Miss will bounce back. And I tell you, one more competitive regional, and you know where I'm going to go with this because you heard me talk about it. I think very overrated is Notre Dame, and I think they've got some people there that can do some things. Now I don't really know what Michigan is because
yeah.
We've never seen them, Craig. We haven't seen them outside of the rim of what is the Big Ten. And I look at that and say, you know, there's somebody could come out of that regional as well. Everything else I think is chalk.
Okay. Roger Wallace just tweeted this. David Pierce is doing a Zoom right now, and this doesn't surprise me at all. He's announced Tristan Stevens is going to start the regional opener against Southern tomorrow afternoon, weather permitting, of course. What's your thoughts on what David is doing, setting up the pitching to have Tristan go in the opener for Texas tomorrow?
Well, first of all, you and I will both agree the most consistent pitcher that the University of Texas has had from day one has been Tristan Stevens.
Yep.
I understand it. He's a guy that, first of all, he works quickly, he throws strikes. He's got stuff to beat anybody. He mixes pitches well, and he sets such a tone. His emotion, he doesn't show it on the field, but his emotion, he's like an emotional leader. You and I both know that. I mean, when he's not pitching, he's very much involved in the action and what's going on. I think it's a wonderful idea, and I would start him in a super regional in game one, not to take anything away against Ty Madden, who's an All-American, just announced, as you probably have announced on your show. He's a high draft choice, and he's going to win most of the games he goes out there. But the second half of the season has been a little bit more of a struggle for Ty than Tristan. Tristan's been that one constant every time out. I think it's a wonderful idea. I thought he might do that. I really did, just because in those type of games, nervousness, guys taking pitches, doing a lot of things, Tristan will not be affected by that because he just pounds the strike zone.
True. And he's had eight full days since he pitched the elimination game against Oklahoma a week ago today. So rest is not an issue, clearly.
Yeah, I agree. No, there's no question. I I like it. I think that's a wonderful idea. And you know, this coaching staff's going to put together the best chance to win, every tournament, or so to speak, because each one of these are little bitty tournaments within the tournament. And I like that. But to be honest with you, I think he's been the best that Texas has had consistently all season long.
Keith and Craig, I don't know if you've seen this yet, but this is, one piece of breaking news that kind of could alter the Austin Regional in terms of Fairfield. Don't know if you guys have seen this. I just saw this come down. Mike Caruso, their senior catcher, sixth in the nation in batting average, had a .432 on-base percentage this year. He is not going to play for Fairfield in the tournament. Broken jaw in practice earlier this week, got hit by a pitch.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. That's a huge blow for Fairfield.
Yeah, that's what they're saying. Yeah, broken jaw, hit by a pitch in practice.
Wow. That's amazing. You never know what's going to take place. Getting ready, you try to keep guys in the best situation you can, and it'll be interesting to see how that came about. I don't think it would be in BP. I think that probably was maybe a hit ball, where you're running the bases and things like that.
It
happens. So the chances of them, even though I think they finished their conference tournament. Craig probably will know this better than I do. Long before anybody else did. I think it was middle of the week last week. So they probably have had some pitchers throwing simulated games.
Yeah, it happened. I want to say their conference tournament finished Wednesday or Thursday maybe of last week. So it was before, and they lost in it. They lost in the championship round to Ryder. That's what got Ryder into the deal as well. Okay, very good. Quick note on Fort Worth, since you're working the Fort Worth region with Denise Shiroff, correct?
Yes. And we've got rain problems just like you do.
Yeah. So hopefully it'll work out, and that there's baseball this weekend. And by the way, like you said, TCU doesn't have a cakewalk. McNeese has proven to be a pretty tough customer here, overcoming flooding, tropical storm issues, COVID, and all that stuff to win the Southland Conference tournament for a second straight year.
It is a really unbelievable story. They've had four catastrophic events in Lake Charles, and actually five if you include COVID. I mean, two hurricanes, a major ice storm that they had electricity down, no water. They've had three different, talking to their coach this morning in a Zoom, they've had three different stints on campus for more than a month in the last year that have no potable water.
Wow.
Three different events. Each one of them lasted a month.
Wow.
So these guys had no stands, no ballpark. They worked out at high school fields. They did everything in the world, and they got in 56-game schedule. Amazing. It really is an amazing story.
No doubt. And Dallas Baptist, is Dallas Baptist a typical DBU team there?
Yeah, they're a little bit different. They don't have that back-end closer that throws 95, but they, much like Texas, they're more physical than they've been in a while. They're in that 75, 78 home run group. There's a few teams over 80 home runs on the year, and they're right there. They do have a good starter. The team, Oregon State, though, watch out. They catch it, they pitch, and they don't run the bases. And I think that's a team that is going to be to reckon with. That first ball game that we have tomorrow afternoon, DBU and Oregon State, will be a good one.
All right. Hey, I appreciate you taking the time, and enjoy the regional, and we'll look forward to catching up next week.
Sounds great. Y'all take care.
That's Keith Moreland with the National View. Ben, that is a huge blow there for Fairfield with Mike Caruso.
Yeah, that was just announced within the hour.
Wow. Now that really hurts them. And as we pointed out, it was that head coach David Pierce announced Tristan Stevens will start for Texas.
Real quick, because I know we got to hit the break, Craig. I'm thinking back to the 18 regional, how Texas opened that one. Mm-hmm. They go chase Sugar game one, come back with Nolan Kingham, probably knowing they were either going to play Texas A&M or Indiana, a pretty good team. But the logic was, and I'll go through and call through the Zoom call with David Pierce later this afternoon, but part of that was, the logic then was, if they needed somebody to give them an inning a batter in a Monday game. Chase Sugar was more capable of doing that probably based on his history than Nolan Kingham. Maybe some of the same logic applies here, knowing Tristan's history as a short reliever.
Could be. And also, this is a deeper pitching staff, too, and I think it's set up for it better to be able to go if it gets on into the Monday, if it gets to an if necessary. And who knows? With the weather, Monday might be a winner's bracket game. Might not be an if necessary. It might not even be a championship round. This thing could get pushed to Tuesday. And it's happened before. I've had a lot of people ask me, you know, how late will they wait till they get it done?
Yeah.
It was a few years ago. They had a regional. I want to say it was either Fullerton or Long Beach or San Diego when they were hosting or something like that. Stanford maybe, where they had to go to Tuesday to finish it. So it was somewhere out west. So if they have to get to it, North Carolina State had one that was rain-plagued, I remember, in Raleigh that they had to finish late. So they'll play till they get it done. And we'll keep going with the show until we get it done as we continue with Light the Tower. Here on The Horn, we're live local and digital on The Horn app and at hornfm.com.
It's Light the Tower with Craig Way, Jeff Howe, and Snoop Daniel.
And just like the guy whose feet are too big for his bed, nothing seems to fit. Those raindrops are falling on my head. They keep falling. So I just did need some talking.
Well, we just lost B.J. Thomas last week. And this was a big, big hit for him, among others. And it's apropos for today with all the rain going down. We continue here on Light the Tower. Thanks to Keith Moreland. Join us time now for The Notebook.
Jeff Howe's Longhorn Notebook, brought to you by Cedar Park Overhead Tours. Go to cptours.com.
Let's get our fun fact of the day out of the way, Craig, since we've had a loaded show, haven't gotten to it. We are 93 days away from kickoff. And I want to take you back. We did this yesterday with talking about that wacky year that was the 1994 season. I want to take you back to the 1993 season, but specifically,
let's start saying, must you?
Well, there's a specific game in there, Craig, and it's memorable, I guess, as memorable as one can be for two reasons. I want to take it to October 2nd of that season. Texas wins a home game, 55-39 over Rice.
Yeah.
It's the first win of the season for the Longhorns in a 5-5-1 season under John Makovic. But here's your fun fact. Now, CB's got his graphic going today, and Stevie Lee, Tavondre Sweat, you know, a lot of different cats.
The 93. Yeah.
But 93 special to me because that day, October 2nd, 1993, a home win over Rice. It's the first Texas football game I ever attended.
Was it really?
The first Texas football game I ever attended. Still have the program from that game in my office. That was back in the day, folks, when they printed single game programs.
Absolutely.
Still have that program in my office. Texas won a 55-39 game. Bertie Manuel was the quarterback for Rice at the time. We know the Black Sunday game was the following year. I think were Bertie Manuel and Josh LaRocca, were they rotating at the time?
Yeah.
I remember that right. And I remember late in the game, Craig, there was a young upstart running back who started getting some carries late named Anthony Holmes. And I'm thinking, hey, this Anthony Holmes guy is pretty good.
Yeah.
Not too bad.
Not too bad, Priest Holmes was. He was pretty good.
Pretty good career.
Yeah.
So that's why 93 is special to me as we hit 93 days until kickoff.
They went 5-5-1 that year. I did Texas, didn't they? 5-5-1 that year, yeah. All right. Lost to Oklahoma that year. Gary Gibbs was the coach of that Oklahoma team.
Well, Gary Gibbs had to beat Texas at some point.
Yeah, and that was the one there. Lost that game. And won some other games. And then then had the Thanksgiving night game against Texas A&M. And the thing that is most vivid, there are two things that are very vivid to me about that day. One, that Thanksgiving was the Leon Lett with the block field goal against Miami.
Oh, my gosh, that was the same Thanksgiving.
The ice snowball thing where he touched the live ball, and then Miami gets another opportunity, kicks field goal, and wins that game. I'm watching that in the press box at Kyle Field because Texas played Texas A&M that night, frigid. And here are the Longhorns at 5-4-1, who, if they beat A&M, would have won the Southwest Conference and would have gone to the Cotton Bowl. And it's 15-9 Aggies in the fourth quarter, and Shea Morenz has them down inside the 10-yard line, and I believe there was an interception in the end zone, and then A&M tacked on a field goal very late. Aggies won it 18-9, I think, and it ended the year 5-5-1 for Texas that year. So,
why do I remember Dennis Allen making a big play for A&M?
Yeah, I think so. Game? I think so.
That sound right?
Yeah, and it was a very, very cold night, and I had to drive back to Dallas after the game. In those days, I was commuting back, and I tell people that was the night that I skidded around the traffic circle in Mahia on the drive back, and just kind of went in this circle and skidded all the way around. It's going back up through Mahia, going up Highway 14 there to go back up. So, yeah, that's kind of what stands out to me about the 93 season.
One thing I do want to get to, we mentioned this yesterday, the ballot for the College Football Hall of Fame is out. And the one name that's intriguing, I think he'll get in, and again, the College Football Hall of Fame, it's not as controversial as certainly the Baseball Hall of Fame or the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Reggie Bush appears on the ballot for the first time, and the criteria is, you had to be a first-team All-American by an NCAA-recognized outlet.
Yep.
You had to be at least 10 full seasons removed from the expiration of your collegiate eligibility, and your professional career has to have wrapped up.
Okay.
That's when they will start the nomination process. Dan Neal, the only Longhorn on the ballot for this class. But, gosh, Craig, there are some freaking ballers that are on this list, if the internet here at the ARN compound will cooperate and allow me to pull this up in somewhat of a timely manner as I continue to filibuster. There it is. Reggie Bush is the one name that I just wonder, because Eric Dickerson was a guy that had to wait forever to get into the College Football Hall of Fame, and a lot of that's probably due to his ties, his time in the SMU program. As we know, things weren't running above board in Dallas at the time. I just wonder if Reggie Bush is going to have to wait, or if he'll get it on the first ballot. If you look just strictly at on-field accolades, on-field success, he's a no-brainer, but this is a guy that had to be disassociated with his program for a time, which I think the disassociation has ended, right? Did it end like last year, the year before?
Yes, that's correct.
But gosh, Craig, you talk about the career some of these guys had in college. I'm just going to run down just some of the guys that in my lifetime. Sean Alexander, great running back at Alabama. LeVar Arrington at Penn State was in Champ Bailey at Georgia, two of the most dominant college defenders of my lifetime. Eric Berry, Earl Thomas wants a Thorpe Award back for the 2009 season. Michael Bishop at K-State is one that, again, took Kansas State to the doorstep of a national championship. Reggie Bush, we just talked about, is on the ballot. Michael Crabtree, he who shall not be named for a lot of Longhorn fans, he's on the ballot as well. And Garrison Hurst had a fantastic career at Georgia. Josh Heupel at Oklahoma to a national championship. Let's see who else. James Laurinaitis from Ohio State showing up on the ballot. He had a fight, Craig. He was a guy you called called games when he was on the field more than once. And there's some guys in here that you've really got to think back to they had great pro careers, but you really got to think back to their college careers. Like Marshawn Lynch at Cal is one I've really got to think back to. Hey, Marshawn Lynch's Cal. I remember that dominant run, obviously, he had in the NFL. Peter Warrick is a guy that if you're talking about a College Football Hall of Fame,
yeah,
that's a first ballot, no doubt, no brainer for me. Like if I could tell a college age kid like right now how good was Peter Warrick, think of what CD Lamb did in that Texas game in 2019, but Peter Warrick was doing that every week at Florida State.
Yeah, that's right. And so he's just now on the ballot.
Just now on the ballot, Peter Warrick is. So, and then Craig, he wasn't playing in that game because he was with the Cowboys at the time, that 93 Texas A&M game we just talked about. But you talk about dominant corners at the college level. They didn't come too much better than Kevin Smith.
No.
At Texas A&M. So, a lot of
he was in my induction class in the Texas High School Football Hall of Fame.
West Orange Stars.
Yeah,
West
Kevin Smith went in when I went in, as did Vince Young.
Yeah, Graham Harrell also on the ballot, and there's a couple other ones to point out. But, yeah, really, there's a backlog of guys needing to get into the College Football Hall of Fame, so just expect every class to be pretty salty.
All right, we'll be back to wrap up Light the Tower here on the Horn.
Craig Way, Jeff Howe, and Snoop Daniel. Light the Tower.
We get ready to wrap up here. Snoop, did you see that Cody Bellinger hit his first home run of the season last night now that he's back?
Good for him.
Grand slam.
Oh.
Dodgers scored 11 in the first. It was an all-time Los Angeles Dodgers.
He's a hoss, man.
Yeah. If they get him going, they could be tough again. We'll find out. And yeah, the Astros, Jeff, have been pretty good against the Red Sox. See how they go from there. And the Rangers are the Rangers.
We're getting to about the time where I'll start really paying attention to baseball.
All right. Including tomorrow, college baseball. The plan is for me to be at the ballpark.
Hell yes.
Jeff Howe will be here. We'll see how it all plays out with the rain. We'll let you know. Stay tuned. Up next will be Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey. For our man Snoop Daniel behind the glass and for Jeff Howe, my co-host, I'm Craig Way. Thanks for joining us. We'll visit with you next time on Light the Tower.